Good morning on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. My name is Brian Madden, and you're listening to BrianMadden.com podcast number 65. So I'm in San Francisco. Jack Madden, you are also in San Francisco, but not with me, I presume, yeah?
That's correct.
We have Gabe joining us from Omaha.
Yep.
And Hello. Also, our guest today is Jarian Gibson, and Hello. You are joining us from I don't know where.
Kansas City, and thanks for having me today.
Yeah. No, thanks for being here. And so here's the deal today. We have no agenda. We have nothing sort of pre-planned. We used to do these BrianMadden.com podcasts, I don't know, fairly regularly over kind of on and off over the past, 5 years or whatever. And people have sort of been asking about, hey, why don't you ever do podcasts? We only started doing a lot of sponsored podcasts, but we never did podcasts that were sort of just us talking about whatever we wanted. And we know there's a lot of very interesting people in the industry and people who are speaking at shows and, Citrix CTPs and VMware experts and, Brianform speakers and people traveling around. And so we figured that we'll start doing our podcast more or less every week. So we're going to shoot for every Tuesday for these and just kind of pick some random person to, join us and just chat. So, Jarian, thanks for being our first random person.
Yeah. Again, thanks for having me. And, it's always great to come on. This is my second time on here. Last time I was on with Dan Brinkman, so it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that now. Okay, we talked about this ahead of time. You asked before the call if we were going to do Skype like last time, and I had been racking my brain trying to remember when we did this. And it was quite a while ago. I forget exactly what we were talking about. Cloud Gateway or something, or.
I think it was a couple of different things, but yeah, it was kind of a chat between us and Dan Brinkman, and I think that was before he made his move to Citrix when he was still a consultant, I believe.
Yeah. So, right, yeah, because he's with the ShareFile group still at Citrix, right?
Yep, he's there, and he made that transition from being from a partner onto the ShareFile team.
So you transitioned from a partner to independent consultant, didn't you, around the same time?
Yep, I made the transition last year. It was actually some great timing because Sean was making that transition to VMware, and I was making that transition to independent. So he actually helped me out a lot. When I got started with some customers, he handed over to me. So I'd spent about 10 years at two different Citrix partners. 5 years at MTM, 5 years at Choice Solutions, and. It was early last year where I started thinking about going independent and looking at doing some other things. I thought about going the vendor route, but I've always wanted to take a shot at being independent. And my wife really encouraged me. And, also with the help from Sean, the advice from Carr Webster, I decided to make the jump. And I went fully independent right after Thanksgiving. I actually flew to Oman and did a project with Carr Webster.
Oh, wow. That's actually, I thought you were independent even before that. It's just that you had the ridiculous home lab even longer before that.
Yeah. So I've had that lab for a while.
So my experience with this lab is you were at Briform. You've been speaking at Briform since probably, 2009?
Yeah. It's been, maybe not 09, probably 10, maybe 2010.
And I think you were giving a demonstration there, and something happened. You were going to try to run this demo from your lab at home, and something happened. You actually had to call your wife for remote support. And so when you said you had a lab, we were like, oh, yeah, whatever. I got a couple of servers at home, too, that, run VMs as needed. And then I think, you described it or showed us pictures or something, and your lab is, like, you need another power line in your basement to power this thing.
Yeah, I actually had to run two dedicated circuits for it. I have a pretty much full 24U rack in my basement. And it was funny because Shane and I were doing some updated demos for our monitoring session we had. I think it was the first one we did at Briform. And I believe the power went out or one of the UPSs had a problem. And we get a call from my wife right before our session.
Things are beeping.
Yeah. There's all this beeping going on downstairs. And, she's going crazy on the phone. So I was like, all right, well, Shane and I will just plan B it. And we actually pulled together some videos we had. And we got some stuff from the vendors last minute to help us out. Because I had an issue with some power in my basement. So, yeah, she came in handy. And she was able to help us out and walk her through shutting everything down and get everything turned off. So that was a fun experience.
How did you know to have a plan B at your first Bry Form?
It was an impromptu plan B, because we did record some videos, we did some stuff, and then we were doing some updated stuff, so we had older content to help us get through it. But then, you know, when that issue happened, I was like, Shane, I go, while I'm working on this, reach out to some of the vendors too to see if they can help us with some of this content, you know, just to be on the safe side. So it was literally a last minute thing, and I remember that Shane and I like literally ran to our session. We got there just in time to start the session because we were trying to get that last minute stuff done with that issue happening. So now, you know, since then, that was probably our second time presenting at Bryform. Since then, you know, it's always good to start looking at, you know, having videos or some kind of backup content, because I got burned, I think, last year at ETELA after Synergy, where I had the same thing happen where I couldn't get into the demo environment to do some demo. So I had to do some last minute shuffling to make the session happen.
So I'm just curious to back up a little bit farther. You know, I know Brian and Gabe's pretty interesting stories about how they got into IT. So what's yours?
So I've always been interested in computers, and I kind of started off young. I think I was in junior high when I started building, you know, custom computers, playing around. I think it was around i386 maybe time frame. You know, started building those, playing with Windows, playing with DOS, you know, going from there. Always, you know, any tech classes I could take in junior high and high school, I would take. And then I went to college, but I actually didn't finish because by the time I got to college, the content was outdated and I was playing with the newer stuff. So I got bored pretty quick, and then I didn't go back after my first semester. I actually started working. So at the time, Intercom was around, and Intercom had a pretty big facility in Omaha where I grew up most of my life, probably from elementary school to all the way through high school. I lived in Omaha. So I worked at Intercom, worked there, you know, building custom configurations, you know, HPs, Compaqs, you know, all the different IBM computers, you know, POS systems for Hallmark, all those different, you know, build order configurations. And then Intercom got bought by Compaq, and it became Custom Edge. And I left there and went to a company in Omaha called Securities America. And I got on as, you know, their help desk, tech support type thing, you know, doing PC replacements and so forth. And they were so busy at the time on their admin staff, for their server admins, that they had a bunch of recruiters and auditors out in the field that were all over the U.S., and they had this custom program they used that every day after the market closed, it had download, you know, megs of updates. And so what they wanted, they came to me and said, hey, this is an opportunity for you to grow into a bigger position. Find us a better solution, because at the time they were doing dial-up through RAS lines and doing VPN, that kind of stuff. So I was told, find a solution, you know, demo us a couple options. If it works out, you know, we'll promote you and you'll be able to run from it from there. So at the time, I looked at, this is when I got interested in Citrix. I looked at MetaFrame 1.8. I looked at, you know, straight terminal services. It was just around 2000. So I started testing Windows 2000 terminal services, MetaFrame 1.8, Tarantella, and there was a couple other ones at the time I tested out.
Graphon.
Yeah. So ended up winning out using MetaFrame 1.8 on Windows 2000, and since everything I did for my testing, I was using, you know, Active Directory and started off with group policy, you know, the shop was an NT shop, still an NT domain. So I said, look, all my testing, all my proof has been using some of the group policy stuff, using all the new stuff in Active Directory in Windows 2000. I don't want to deploy this on Windows NT 4.0 Terminal Server Edition, so what can we do? And so my boss is like, okay, well, you know, find a plan to do that migration to Active Directory. And so I had to figure that out as well. So did a migration to Active Directory, Windows 2000 domain controllers, you know, stood up MetaFrame 1.8. All the people in the field really liked it. It kind of grew into a home, work-from-home use case as well, when we had the snow days in Omaha, as Gabe knows about, you know, when everything shuts down because it's either, you know, too cold because of the wind chill or icy and snow. So it became for that as well. And I just kept over the years, you know, MetaFrame 1.8, XP 3.0, 4.0, and I kept trying to get the whole company to deploy on Citrix. I was like, you know, part of this job was PC replacement kept having to happen, you know, these refreshes. And I was just like, we could slow this down if we kind of went to this model. And finally, you know, I kept doing proposals, you know, going in front of like the management staff. And finally, my boss said, look, he goes, you're a great resource. You need to be a consultant because you have that mentality already. He goes, you know, you can stay here as long as you want, but you need to kind of go out and grow. So that's what I did. And I started consulting from there, you know, went to MTM and then Choice Solutions and now independent.
That's crazy. So he, I mean, talk about good support where he, I mean, when he said that you need to be a consultant, he meant outside of that organization. Like you weren't fired, right?
No, I wasn't like, fired.
You should go be a consultant now.
You should go somewhere else.
No, they were really good because he goes, you have a job here as long as you need it. You know, both my team leader and my boss wrote me glowing letters recommendation, you know, when I finally made that jump. So I moved down to Austin, Texas, had some friends down there from high school, got on with MTM, and then, you know, went through Chicago, Austin, Minneapolis. I was contracting for a while, and then my wife's from Kansas City. So when we started looking to settle down, it was coming back to Kansas City or Omaha, and I said, let's go to Kansas City. Looked at a couple options and ended up picking the local platinum partner here to work with.
Man, that's crazy that, you know, so Gabe, we've talked about this, but Gabe and I met at Inicom essentially. We were at Vanstar, which is a company that Inicom bought. But so what years were you at Inicom? Were we all coworkers in the past?
It might have been because it was, I think, a year or two before the Compact bought them.
So which was 99, I think. Or
yeah, I was thinking I was there like around 98, 99 I was there.
That's
I
mean, when we were there too, yep.
Yeah, because it was 99, I think, is when the acquisition happened for Vanstar. So we were there for around a year, year and a half before Inicom just went out of business altogether.
Was that when
I was there that day.
Was that when they fired everybody by phone message?
Yeah, that's exactly. Jarian, were you part of that too?
No, I actually left before that happened.
So, man, I was the only sucker that was still there.
Yeah, I had just left. I think that was March of 2000 that happened, or somewhere around there.
It was June 18th. I know this because it was my dad's birthday, and it was a Friday. I was actually out at a billable engagement, but they were scrapping for work at the time. So I think I was at a bank in Cleveland, and they had dropped off like 20 laptops and said, "None of these work. Try to make as many good ones as you can." And so I had all 20 of these laptops taken apart and spread across a bench. And I went home on a Friday thinking I'll come back in on Monday. And I got home, there was an email, and it just said, dial in for this company update. And so I called in for the company update, and they said, you know, we regret to inform you we've terminated all of our employees, and we stopped paying our insurance benefits 2 months ago, so good luck with that. And
so
I felt worse for the bank, frankly, because that, you know, we knew things weren't going well. I felt worse for the bank because they were going to come in on Monday to 20 laptops in complete disarray.
So I, Gabe and I were living together at that time in Cleveland. We were roommates. And I remember you called because I was not working at Inicom then. I had moved on to a different consulting company, and you listened to that voicemail. It said, we're filing Chapter 11. And then you like hung up and were like, dude, Inicom went bankrupt. I'm like, what? And then I dialed the phone and I listened to the message longer than you. And I got through the part. You kept on listening past that we're filing Chapter 11. And by the way, all employees are immediately, we're ceasing operations. All employees should stop back to the office and turn in all their laptops and badges and everything. And
I think we were on different sides though, because you guys were probably out in the field. I was more in one of their facilities doing the custom builds.
So you were the Omaha part that got sold to Compaq.
Yeah. So I was part of that when they were Compaq and Custom Edge. So the plants like in Omaha, and I think I went to Swedesboro one time, New Jersey, I think it was. And then Indianapolis as well, that when they bought somebody. But yeah, I think most of the plants they stayed on for a while and became a part of Compaq.
So yeah, in fact, I met somebody just recently that worked at Custom Edge, which is what that eventually became. And that somehow is still that building is still around. They're still doing some sort of assembly there, but I don't think it's PCs. It's definitely not Compaq or HP in the way that it was back then. There are still some Inicoms out there too, because Inicom was strange. They actually did franchises, And it wasn't really Inicom that created them. Years before, so Brian and I worked for Vanstar. Vanstar was originally a company called Computerland, and Computerland was like CompUSA. So they had services, they had products, and they had corporate and franchise-owned locations. So Computerland got absorbed into Vanstar. Vanstar got absorbed into Inicom. And when Inicom went out of business, all those Computerland franchises that had changed their names over the years still existed. And so there's actually a company in Columbus called Inicom, Columbus, Ohio, called Inicom with the Inicom logo and everything that is still operating under that name today.
Fun fact. So if you go to Inicom.com, yeah, it's got some computer company. What's funny is, so Vanstar, we always joked, was like some kind of like van, you know, shipping type company that were like of tracking, like, yeah, I got the Vanstar system. Your package will be there at 2 o'clock. And now if you go to Vanstar.com, it is like a van pool commuting website. So it took 20 years to get there, but, so here's what I'm curious about. So Jarian, so Gabe and I grew up, as consultants, you know, working for bigger companies, working independently, kind of combination. So, so our history is similar to yours, except your path and our paths kind of diverged, like, you know, 8 or 10 years ago when Gabe and I sort of went doing more of what we're doing now. It's more like industry analysts and blogging and that kind of stuff. And whereas you are out there in the field, you know, sort of, day in, day out. And, so you have, I feel like, a much better connection to what is actually happening in the world than I have. And so I'm curious, like, what – in general, first of all, so the kind of consulting you're doing, I assume it's all the same type of stuff that, you know, we're always talking about on the website. You're doing, you know, it's VDI, RDSH, ZenApp, ZenDesktop, all that. Do you focus mostly on forms of desktop virtualization, or are you doing all, like, general Microsoft-type consulting?
So it's mostly desktop and app virtualization and mobility stuff. So, you know, most of what I do is RDSH, Zen Desktop, you know, Vue RDS, Zen Mobile, you know, that kind of stuff. Some NetScaler, but most of it's still around desktop and application virtualization.
And so what are you seeing out there? I mean, you know, we did an article last week on Horizon 6. Horizon 6.1, and, you know, obviously last year VMware added RDSH support, seamless windows, you know, application publishing, that kind of stuff, and they've been slowly chipping away, adding more features. Are you seeing any, like, do you run into any Horizon out in the world, or are your customers, who are Citrix customers, like, are they looking at it, are they using Horizon as leverage to get better pricing from Citrix, or do you, like, is that, Does that impact what you're seeing at all, or is it just like a non thing?
So even before they started adding all of the new features and kind of trying to close the gaps between themselves and Citrix, there was, you know, shops out there running Vue and running Pure VDI, and, you know, there are successful deployments I've come across and worked with. There were some at times to where there was bake-offs done, or they were a Vue shop and they were having some issues, so they wanted to evaluate the Citrix side, that I've helped with that. For the most part, it's still a lot of Citrix. I do have larger customers that I work with, though, that are Citrix shops, but they continue to look at the alternatives out there, just to make sure they're doing their due diligence, especially as they're going from, you know, older versions to newer versions, especially with, you know, where Citrix had that feature parity gap between IMA and FMA. So they're looking, they're evaluating, and making sure that the solution they're deploying is the best one for their user. So you're still seeing a lot more of Citrix, but you're seeing more and more people looking at the Horizon suite, looking at things like VWorkspace, even entertaining, you know, Pure RDS too, as well from the patch I work within.
And, you know, it's funny. I mean, you could go back to probably 2003. When was Server 2003 R2 released? Because even back then, I remember an article about Bear Paw, yeah, and is this going to be the Citrix killer? And you know, I feel like every year, every release, there's a new feature built into RDS that chips away a little bit at the sort of the low hanging fruit of the Citrix world, the people that are, you know, just doing it because that was the only solution available to them years ago. So it's interesting to see how many people are talking about just plain RDS now. I think even Claudio, is it last year, Bryform, or 2 years ago, gave a session about just an Excel script that, or an Excel spreadsheet that he wrote, that you fill out this spreadsheet, and then there's a bunch of scripts that that kicks off to actually provision an RDS environment for you.
Yep.
So, you know, even with little tools like that, it's more powerful than it was.
Yeah, so, and no matter what you look at, too, you're paying the Microsoft tax no matter what. So why not look at RDS, especially as Microsoft makes some improvements to it? You know, usually it's not enough to, you know, to overtake Horizon or XenApp or any other solution out there. But for some customers, it's good enough and it works for them.
Well, now, what is it? So, you know, the classic case with RDS was, you know, there's a lot of things that Citrix and I guess you could say now VMware offer on top of it. I mean, I think in a lot of cases, you know, RDP, the RDP protocol nowadays is really good. And yeah, you can always get into protocol comparisons and say one's better in this scenario than the other. But I feel like in general, the protocol is okay. But still, I think the RDS limitations, correct me if I'm wrong, are still the limitations we've had for the past 10 to 15 years, where you don't have really good sort of, I'll say, like, collective multi-server management and like the concept of app publishing across servers and all that kind of stuff. It's still very kind of kludgy to, you know, once you go beyond one server, it feels like it's pretty kludgy to actually build a decent solution out of it.
Yeah, management has gotten better as they've improved, especially with Server 2012 R2, but yeah, it's still not what it could be. It's not the best. You know, you can get by with it, and, you know, you can use Server Manager to do some stuff and, you know, those type of things. But yeah, where the other products shine, it's the management and it's the extra options you have.
And I wonder if, you know, in the old days, there was always talk about Microsoft purposefully not adding too many features to core server why should they kill off Citrix? I mean, Citrix has, you know, thousands of employees focusing on making a good product. And as you say, the Microsoft tax is there regardless. So there was a lot of talk about Microsoft sort of purposefully holding back just so that, you know, there'd be enough stuff for Citrix to get. I wonder if VMware entering the picture changes anything, you know, where Microsoft is like, although again, I guess it's, you know, again, Microsoft gets paid regardless.
Exactly.
it really doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. So whether you're doing pure RDS, Microsoft, Citrix, you know, vWorkspace, Microsoft's still getting their money. So why mess with that ecosystem?
Yeah. There's a bunch of more questions I want to ask you about, like, mobility and stuff too. But one of the questions we got from the chat room is, someone says, "Hey, I'm curious to hear if you guys are happy about VMware letting Zen Desktop and Zen App use vGPU pass-through on vSphere 6." So he says, "This lets us Citrix guys have another choice besides just Zen Server for 3D VDI." So thoughts on that?
I like it. You know, I think it had to be done because even with the shops I've worked with, they were trying to do using vGPU or using graphics and doing the pass-through stuff. And most of them on the VMware shops were doing, you know, the direct pass-through. So it's good to see VMware do this because, you know, I've worked with some shops where they want to do the vGPU and the sharing stuff, and they weren't Zen Server shops. They were VMware shops, but they looked at Zen Server and tested out the options. So I think it's good to have, and it's something that the market needed because, again, competition, you know, drives innovation, makes everyone better. So
and
I like it.
It seems like, I mean, Zen Server is just kind of dying a slow death. Is that fair? I mean, I know Zen Server had a lot of credibility. A lot of people used it, especially on a lot of Citrix projects, for years and years. But now people we talk to, I mean, it's vSphere or Hyper-V.
Yeah, I think, you know, because I still have a good amount of customers using Zen Server. I actually did a session last year at Synergy where I worked with a healthcare doing, you know, 13,000 users, you know, and it's all Zen Server, where they're a huge VMware shop, but everything Citrix is on Zen Server. And I still see other times where people are pure Zen Server shops or using Zen Server, especially for the desktop and app side. I think where the confusion came was when Citrix pulled features back and the whole open source announcements. I think that kind of confused people, and that kind of led to, okay, here's the push towards Hyper-V. But I think with the latest version of Zen Server and some of the enhancements they've made, I think, you know, over time you'll see that start chipping back away and into some of the shops again.
Wait. Chipping back away, like going back towards Zen Server?
Yeah, because if you look at some of the things they're doing, you know, the partnership with Atlantis for the USX stuff, them changing the architecture so they can open it up to more possibilities, to where the old architecture, you know, some of the performance and scalability wasn't there. You have some of that in 6.5. And so it'd be interesting to see how they actually improve on that, or what they add now where they don't have those limitations anymore like they did with the old architecture. I'm not saying that everyone's going to turn around and start going back to Zen Server, but, you know, if the messaging gets right with Citrix and they start doing some better things with it now they've got away from the old architecture, I can see it being, you know, introduced back into some shops again.
What do you think Citrix's interest is for continuing to do stuff with Zen Server versus just sort of throwing everything back to Microsoft? Because you got the same Microsoft tax here too. Like, anyone who wants to use Hyper-V can use it for free because they're paying enough Microsoft licenses in some way or another. So what do you think? Why do you think Citrix is continuing with Zen Server rather than saying, let's just focus everything on Hyper-V?
I think they need it. You know, they need to have that, especially in the portfolio, to say, look, you can buy this license, not have to worry about buying anything extra. Because even if you do the free version Hyper-V and you want to deploy Zen Desktop or Zen App and get those hooks in the integration, you need System Center, which, you know, especially Virtual Machine Manager, and everyone's not either just is not going to want to buy that, especially in smaller shops, or, you know, SCVMM is kind of a pig in my opinion. So, you know, there's a simplicity there of the integration with their own hypervisor. Plus, you know, them having that, they can do more of the integration with it without having to worry about third-party integration as well. Now, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. And I guess, with vSphere 6 having, you know, vGPU, I wonder, and so that Zen Server, of course, has had that for a year or so. And Hyper-V does not have that, though. You guys know? I think it doesn't.
They don't. And yeah, it's something I think would be welcome to see that from Microsoft, but who knows?
Is that just Microsoft, though? Or, I mean, does that require Microsoft to work with NVIDIA? I mean, there's probably an NVIDIA element here, too, where they're sort of dancing with the ones that brought them.
Yeah, so no matter what they do, they're going to have to work with NVIDIA. You know, Citrix did it, VMware did it, so Microsoft will have to work with NVIDIA to get that into Hyper-V.
So I'm curious now on the mobility side of things, because, you know, so obviously we, on our website, we focus on mobility through Jack, and we kind of have, there's just this interesting relationship between sort of mobility and desktop virtualization, because, you know, you can argue on one hand that they are different and unrelated. You can argue on another hand that, though, well, they're both about delivering enterprise apps to users wherever they are, and, you know, you might have different, you know, and then with mobility, you've got device management versus app management and everything. And then, of course, you also have, you know, even if you argue that these things are kind of separate, but then VMware buys AirWatch and Citrix has Zen Mobile, and, you know, so all the desktop virtualization companies are, you know, getting into the mobility space. And one thing that Jack and Gabe and I talk about, I mean, I feel like we have this conversation once a month, is like, is there really a mobility hook into, you know, if you are the Zen app admin or the Windows app admin in your company, and then, you know, you're managing Zen App and Zen Desktop and delivering apps and that kind of stuff, and then Citrix or VMware or others are coming at you for like, hey, you got to bring mobility into this. You know, are customers actually buying off on that concept, where they are actually saying, okay, let's build this into our mobility strategy as part of, like, as an extension of Zen App and Zen Desktop? Or is this becoming more like from the other angle, where it's sort of like the old Exchange team who used to run BlackBerry Enterprise Server are now, you know, also like the AirWatch guys?
From my experience, and I've been doing a lot of Zen Mobile probably the past year and a half, I think, since the acquisition of Zenprise. I've been working with the product and doing a lot of POCs and deployments around it. It depends on the size of the company and who owns what. Usually the smaller shops, it's the desktops and application admins. In the larger shops, it could be the messaging team. It could be the security team. It could be a mix of the group working together. So it depends on the size of the company and how their team's laid out.
And do you find people using Zen Mobile? Because you can get Zen Mobile, there's two editions, right? Like Standard and Enterprise.
And I think on-prem and cloud, right?
So yeah, so you have a couple ways to do it. So you have the different editions. You know, there's the MDM edition, the Advanced Edition, Enterprise Edition, and then you can also get it with the Workspace Suite licensing. And then you have the option to do it on-prem or as a mobile cloud or go to like a hosted provider for it.
And what do you find that people do? Like, is there enough value in the more expensive enterprise version of Zen Mobile for people, or can they just use the basics and not really have to pay a lot for it?
It depends what they want to do and how they're doing it, and especially, you know, where the device ownership falls. So, you know, because MDM edition, you're going to fully own the device, manage the device level, and then as you get into the advanced edition, that's where you're getting the Works apps, the sandbox, you know, the apps, that type of thing. And then Enterprise is kind of both of that, plus you're getting the full features of ShareFile Enterprise. So it just depends on what their strategy is and what they're wanting to do with it, depending on what edition they have. I've deployed, you know, just the mobile device management for companies that are just looking to roll out to a specific use case, and they want to manage their own company devices within, like, you know, in the field or within, say, like a hospital. And then others where they just want to give people access to stuff and not have to worry about some of the things of having that crossover between, you know, their personal email and their work email and the whole fun use case there.
Do you think that users are pretty much okay with this?
It depends, because, you know, some of those sandbox emails, they have some more improvement to be done on them, especially when you get that native email experience, and especially around push notifications for one, those type of things. So it's kind of a mix right now with some of the companies I've worked with.
So by the way, I feel like, I don't know. I'm just throwing all these questions at you. I hope this is okay. I'm just so curious on all these.
Yeah, you're fine. Things, bring it on. I'm not shy.
Feel free. So there's these other things too. How about, okay, there's two trends that I'm kind of excited about for, you know, say like 2015. And I'm just curious on, again, like what someone thinks who's sort of out there in the real world more. First is VMI, so virtual mobile infrastructure. And this, for those listening, we've done a few podcasts on this. This is VMI. It's like VDI for mobile. So the idea is, you are remotely connecting back to an application running in a data center or the cloud or whatever, but you're connecting from a mobile device. You're connecting to a mobile OS. So it's like you have, it's like the same thing as like having your HDX, you know, RDP ICA client on your phone, except you're remoting back to an Android app. And even if you're using an iPhone as a client, so there's like a hypervisor in the data center that's running all these Android VMs, and maybe that's the work environment. So it's got your work mail and all your work apps and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's got the same pros and cons as VDI, and not the, like, this is not the future of mobile applications or anything like that. But if you, you know, want to just figure out how to support, I don't know, like one, like, it's nice because you can do everything on Android. Even if your users are using iPhones, you know, you can still just deploy the client to them, and then all your work apps can be all Android apps. So there's a few companies that are doing this now. I'm just curious, like, this to me sounds really cool, but do you cringe when you hear this, or is this like, I think it has potential?
I don't cringe, especially, you know, because you have that flexibility with Android. My guess would be, you know, we'll be able to do the iOS use case for that. So Android to iOS or Android to iOS or iOS to iOS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that Apple, you know, unless they're going to start doing it, I don't know if Apple let that happen. And maybe you guys from looking at this have seen that, but I don't know if that's going to be possible, at least not right now with iOS.
But Citrix acquired Virtual, and Virtual has the ability to do that. I guess everybody has the ability to do that, right? But Virtual has that ARM-based hypervisor, and they specifically use it for virtualizing iOS.
But
so that you can develop against it, but Apple would probably never allow it to be done commercially.
Yeah,
but still, so I've been thinking of this, you know, I personally see this, I guess I don't really see the reason is going for remoting iOS to iOS, because, like, yeah, you have the user experience that actually matters, but I mean, first of all, I, you know, still think it's like, you know, snowball's chance in heck that that'll officially be you know, be condoned by you know, by Apple. And even the hurdles of getting you know, getting Google or getting Android in a data center certified as a Google device is still, you know, kind of a not completely solved issue. So we have there's that to deal with too. But you know, if you're delivering iOS and Android from the data center, well, congratulations, you've just doubled your app development workload and increased your management complexity. Plus, you know, with Android, we're assuming that there are all sorts of modifications and skinning and stuff that we can do. And if we want to publish single Android apps versus publishing the entire, you know, remote Android experience, you know, my thought is let's work on the problems first with making you know, making VMI work in the first place before we think about other platforms.
Yeah, and right now I can completely see it from like a test dev training type scenario, but from that widespread scenario, I don't know yet on that one.
I have to say, I'm looking at my phone right now. I'm looking at my iPhone in my hand and swiping back and forth through this Android environment, and it's working pretty good, and it has you know, all the apps that I needed in it, and it looks pretty cool. I'll tweet a picture later.
This is what? This is a VMI?
Yeah. This is HyperI that I'm looking at right now.
So what is it? I mean, like, my God, like these questions I'm asking you, I sound just like – these are the same questions I asked in 1997 about WinFrame. I'm like, wait, so like, I mean, is it okay? Does it feel normal?
Yeah. This one pretty much this is you know, I've had my hands on a few different ones at this point, and we'll get my hands on a few more. And you know, this is the one that it completely exposes everything about the Android just like it normally is. So same exact same settings app as I need or as you have, and I deliberately have the very stock Android home screen layout, you know, with the clock in the middle and the Google search bar at the top. And this one there's the back button and the home button and the multitasking button at the bottom, right directly above my iPhone home screen button. It's you know, like when we talk about like the party trick of having you know, of having a remote desktop client and on an iPad in 2010, like I'm excited to be on the initial wave of the party trick of having you know, a remote Android client on my iPhone.
Well, but you have an iPhone 6, so people are gonna be like, oh, what's that, the Galaxy S5 or
like this is iOS 9.
Yeah, they're just going to think that you got a little, like you made out of aluminum foil, the Apple sticker for the back of your Galaxy.
Yeah, credit to Dan Shapir for that joke, by the way, for putting that on the blog post from last week.
I mean, we used to do that when I was a consultant, when I first moved to Omaha, we used to do that kind of crap all the time where, you know, like, oh, check out this Bondi Blue iMac, original iMac that can I'm running Windows on it. Ooh. Or my favorite was the 386 with the DOS client.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, we're good at party tricks. And this kind of technology is perfect for it.
Yeah, it'd be good to see what Citrix does with that virtual acquisition and how that plays out. I'm interested to see what they do with it and, you know, what they can do with it. As they work with that acquisition.
Well, then how about with the Octoblu acquisition?
So the session I think I'm most excited about at Bryform is Joe Shonk talking about the Internet of Things, because there were a few sessions submitted about it, and I'm like, man, I don't even know if we care about IoT from a desktop virtualization perspective. So Joe's session is literally about, do we care about IoT from an enterprise perspective, and why we should, because he believes that we should. So I think I'm mostly excited about that session at Bryform. Yours too, Jarian.
Oh, thank you. No, I am too, because, you know, IoT is kind of the hot new thing on the scene, and it's, you know, everyone's talking about it, but you know, you see people like, I think Steve was tweeting about his laser cat or something like that he was working on the other day on Twitter. But, you know, from a business perspective, how it's going to be used, is Citrix going to use it more for improving their own APIs, what they have in-house and integrating with their products? You know, hopefully we'll see that, you know. But, you know, seeing the business use cases for it is what I'm excited for.
And that's
how they use it for that.
Sorry, and that's what we should see it for. Is the, I mean, I listened to a call with Mark Templeton. It was like their earnings call from last quarter, and he had said it's not about IoT for Citrix. It's about integration of everything. So, you know, hopefully, we could interpret this as integrating all those crazy things that we've been bitching about for years that haven't been integrated.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'd hold my breath for that specific situation, but it sounds like this is more about just automating everything that Citrix can do, which is quite a bit these days. I mean, from, you know, the traditional desktop vert stuff to mobility, and then there's the NetScaler Cloud Gateway, that kind of stuff too. So, you know, if they can start kicking off workflows based on other sensors, that's pretty neat.
Well, like you've seen some of the test ones you've seen out there where they've done like share file and go to meeting and that kind of stuff. When you get to a certain point, it kicks off the meeting. When you're done with the meeting, it uses share file to send the content to the attendee. So,
and it knows who was in there. You didn't have to, yeah. It just knows who was in the room.
So those type of things, what I'm excited for and how they expand that across their product stack.
Mm-hmm. So, I was going to ask you about a couple other things on Citrix products. So I don't know what your question was, Jack, but,
So my question was about another trend that I was I'm following and excited about this year, and it's kind of a few interrelated things, but it's basically like the bringing of EMM type concepts to desktops, and so that like the three questions are: number one, what do you actually see people doing at the companies that you're consulting with about MacBooks? Because I know, you know, this is like something we've been talking about for 10 years now, but it seems like the answer in a lot of cases really is nothing. The second question is like MDM-like APIs for Windows 8.1 and Mac OS X. In general. And the third question is, man, sorry. Each one of these is its own half-hour discussion. The third question is, so I'm looking at these products like Workspot and the Mocha 5 Project Skynet, sort of like these remote, you know, these, they're sort of like container, the way that we containerize stuff on mobile apps, except like Mocha 5 Project Skynet has their desktop containers, and so I guess whichever one of those three questions that you want to start with.
Yeah, so the APIs on, you know, like Mac and Windows, so Zen Mobile does have a little bit of stuff it can do on the Windows desktop side with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. You know, seeing that kind of more expanded, I think I like to see, because, you know, it shouldn't matter what the device is. Using that technology to manage the applications and the different containers and that kind of stuff, you know, I like to see that universal across all devices, not just, you know, my iOS or my Android or my Windows phone, you know, because there are some solutions out there, and I haven't seen these yet in companies that have Macs. You know, usually they're doing some kind of player on the Mac and delivering a Windows machine that way is the most I've seen. But you see products like Parallels, who, you know, they can integrate with SCCM, with their Parallels desktop for that kind of management. And you're seeing Microsoft do some stuff, and then even those lines. So I think we'll start seeing more of it. It's just not there today.
Yeah. Is anybody really asking yet to start rolling out like MDM for laptops?
Not yet. The most they've looked at is, hey, I've got Surface tablets or some kind of Windows tablet, and I want to look at how I can use the MDM side with it, and there are some policies with an MDM that you can do some management of the Windows. I like to see more, because it's not as much as you could do with, you know, with iOS or Android or Windows Phone.
Yeah, and I think we'll see a big jump with Windows 10 anyway.
Yeah, and how they're changing that. But yeah, I think taking that to the next step with enterprise mobility management and all that kind of stuff should be looking at how we can do more of laptops and desktops and kind of make those become one instead of having two separate solutions
and
in some cases.
I guess that leads into a good Windows 10 question anyway. Are your customers talking about that yet?
None so far. They're testing it and looking at it, but they're not talking about making the jump. You're still, you know, most shops are still Windows 7 or getting to Windows 7. Majority I work with are Windows 7. I'm not seeing a lot of Windows 8 or 8.1 yet in the people, in the ones I work with. But I think you'll start seeing that Windows 10 will probably make them skip Windows 8 and 8.1 and go from 7 to 10 is what I'll probably see, just because the way they've redone it and the enhancements and, you know, kind of your start menu type thing, and not as big of a UI change as it was with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1.
Yeah, and this whole idea that it, like, this one shouldn't be a big giant pill to swallow. It should be a just we do it thing, and now and then from now on we'll just update it every, you know, every 6 months or whatever, like we do with our phones. And or I don't know, you guys are all way more experienced than I am. Like, they can say that, but is that a pipe dream?
We'll have to see how it happens, you know, see how Microsoft does it. I do like the concept of Windows 10. I do what they've done with it, but got to see how that goes. So far, the updates from being in the beta process have been pretty smooth. So it could happen. It could actually work fine for them.
So, you know, another one of your questions, Jack, was about the Mac, like how people deal with MacBooks in the enterprise.
Yeah, most of it is going to be either the remoting protocol, RDPs, an app, you know, whatever is in desktop, or they're looking at using some of those players out there. Like, you know, before I did some stuff with customers on POCs with Mocha 5, I have seen customers' interest in desktop player for Mac from Citrix. I haven't done much of it on the VMware side, though, as of yet.
But what about the customers that... you know, I'm like local office 2011 and everything else is browser based or something like that. Like any type of management of the actual Mac OS environment itself.
I haven't come across that. Usually it's remoting or some kind of player. I haven't come across actually people actually trying to manage the actual Mac OS.
So like another question that I had that was kind of unrelated to this, to all these ones Jack was asking, when we did the Horizon 6 stuff, or we wrote about Horizon 6.1, you know, and I think I wrote in that article that I was briefed by Sean Bass, which was like amazing.
kind of weird.
Yeah. But he was talking about VMware's acquisition of, who was it? Nicira? No, did I make that up? Who's that billion-dollar networking?
Nicira, yeah.
For the NSX stuff?
Yeah. And, you know, how they can, they don't have this yet, but the idea is they're looking at, so this is kind of like VLAN network level integration with applications and that kind of stuff. So they know if you connect to this published app, that like this app or this process or whatever should have access to only these network segments, and you know, so it can sort of prevent, theoretically prevent like
the wrong access
the guy with access to the billing system from accessing your customer records and, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, does Citrix, do they? Because obviously Citrix has NetScaler. I've never been like a quote, you know, NetScaler guy. Does Citrix have anything like this? Are they talking about this? Like, is this really? To me, it seems really exciting, but since I'm not really a networking guy, maybe a real networking guy is like, yeah, we've been doing this for like 10 years. It's no big deal.
So for me, I like the concept. I've actually tried to do this with products in the past where I worked with an energy company, a large one down in Texas, to where, you know, they were doing this on their desktop, and back then it was with Juniper and Juniper's Odyssey client, and we were trying to make that work inside of XenApp and Zen Desktop, to where, you know, based on like their network credentials or based on the application they launched, they could only get to certain points on the network and only access certain things. So I think, you know, that's going to be needed, especially in some more secure environments. So I'm excited to see what they do with that, and that's one thing I'm watching from VMware. I'm not sure if Citrix has anything with it. I don't think you can do that today with NetScaler and that concept, and I'm not sure if they have anything planned for that, but hopefully they do, and somehow that can integrate with NetScaler or other network components. But I think it's going to be neat, especially in some more, you know, sensitive environments, higher secure environments, to start with for use cases.
Yeah.
What do you think about Citrix getting rid of VDI in a box? I was a small part of me was very hurt by that.
Yeah, same here. I've actually worked with VDI in a box, and I deployed it for a couple of customers and projects with it. I like the concept of the VDI in a box. The simplicity of it was nice. The management piece wasn't so nice once you got it set up. But just being able to, you know, have the virtual appliances, create the grid, that concept, it's something I would love to see inside of Zen Desktop. And maybe we'll see something like that, what they're doing with some of the other acquisitions that they've recently purchased. But yeah, I was sad to see it go, but I'm interested to see what their strategy is for replacement, because they need something like that in the stack.
I don't know if I have the confidence that they're going to keep something as simple as that. I think it's just going to be like, you know, Zen Desktop VDI, small business VDI edition or something that, because they never marketed VDI in a box as a large organization solution. It was always some sort of arbitrary number associated with it, 500 users and smaller, 1,000 users and lower, 50 I heard one time. So I think Citrix never viewed it as how we viewed it. And so I really don't know. I think in their mind, a small business edition of Zen Desktop is the appropriate replacement for VDI in a box. And I agree with you that it was the management, it was the grid architecture. That was the best part of it. And we were hoping that they would take those things and put them into Zen Desktop. But as it turns out, all they did was take the small businessy stuff out of it and make, you know, Zen Desktop VDI edition or whatever instead. So they did decide to merge some of the VDI in a box feature set, but it was the wrong features.
Yeah. And so maybe, who knows, maybe we'll come back with something with the Workspace Pod. From what I wasn't on the earnings call when they talked about that, but I heard that, you know, Workspace Pod was said to possibly be their replacement for that. So I guess we're interested to see what they do with the Workspace Pod stuff, and maybe the Symbolic acquisition plays into that in some way. You know, who knows? I have no idea yet at this point, but I'd like to see something.
So you were at Summit, speaking of Workspace Pod. I mean, is this like a hardware solution that you're buying, or are you just assembling all the pieces to make a Workspace Pod oriented solution?
So yeah, so they kind of had the Workspace Pod where they talked about you know, working with Moonshot and then working with DataOn for some of the companies for it. So they're gonna, you know, from the start you have those two, and it appears they're working with other hardware vendors as well to come with that stack solution to kind of have that architecture kind of on the lines of what you're seeing with other solutions, you know, from like VMware and other companies out there today along those lines.
Gotcha. One other thing. I wrote recently that Zen Client, I think, might be on the way out. Do you have any customers that are using Zen Client?
So I've had a couple I've worked with and some other POCs. It was kind of more aligned for those shops that were using PBS to the physical desktop. They POC or looked at Zen Client to change that out, because, you know, with PBSing to physical machines, you always had to worry about the different drivers, software, or firmware, the different components in there, making a common image. You know, it worked, but it didn't work. So I worked with, you know, especially in education, on using Zen Client to replace that, to still have that centralized management from the synchronizer, but then have everything running locally and not worry about the network connection or the stream or the different types of hardware out there. So I came across in those use cases. I'm not sure what's going to happen with it with the changes at Citrix. I'm still, like you, waiting to find out, you know, what's going to happen with that product.
Yeah, so, I mean, Citrix has come out and said that there's nothing on the in the short term, I guess, nothing in the foreseeable future, they said, to indicate that it's going away from the product team. But, you know, that product team's in disarray right now. So I think anything can happen. And that's not a quick process either. So to get rid of Zen Client, they've already open sourced Zen Client XT. So that the whole like hardened version of that made for the government has been sort of turned away, and they sort of did that with very little fanfare. But like to make the rest of Zen Client go away would, I think there's like a, they have to come up with some sort of replacement first for that. So I, you know, it's probably is 12 months out, but I do think the writing's on the wall.
Yeah, I agree too. I think instead of having a replacement for it, I would like to see kind of the synchronizer technology and the Zen desktop, Zen app stuff kind of melded into a single product instead of having two separate pieces like it is today. And who knows, maybe they'll look more at the player side than the bare metal side and go that route instead.
Yeah, so. That was my takeaway too, was that the desktop player type 2 side is probably the easiest way for them to go, because then they're not worrying about supporting the kernel and making the kernel work on modern hardware. I mean, they spend a lot of time and they're always behind the times.
Yep.
Doing that. The problem is that, and maybe you can confirm this or maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like if you bought Zen Client, you bought it for the benefits of a type 1. And now they're saying that's, we're going to pull this away, but we're going to give you a type 2. Like that's a different use case in my mind.
Well, it is a different use case, but most customers that I've worked with, they've got it with their Zen Desktop Enterprise or Platinum licensing. They didn't just buy Zen Client standalone.
Mm-hmm.
They've had it because they had a licensing that they have. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So for those customers that get it with their entitlement for Zen Desktop Enterprise or Zen Desktop Platinum, I don't think it's going to be a much big of an issue to those customers who bought standalones and client licensing. You know, what's their transition plan for that? That's going to be the bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple other questions along these lines we got from people in the chat room. One asking if any of us feel that Citrix is dragging their feet on things, just kind of in general. The system on a chip initiative seems to have been short-lived. Chrome OS still does not support USB reduction, which they talked about last year at Synergy. And just in general, Citrix seems to be, you know, well, I guess that's the question, dragging their feet. What do you guys think?
I'm not sure if it's dragging their feet. I just think there's a lot going on. And maybe with the changes they made recently is probably maybe to help them refocus maybe.
Changes like the layoffs.
Massive layoffs, yeah.
The layoffs and those along those lines. I don't know. I think Synergy this year will be pretty telling, you know, what's announced, what things are coming out. I think that will kind of see what their direction will be once we see the keynote from Synergy 2015.
We said that last year too. We said that last year. They announced Workspace Services. They said it would embrace and extend Microsoft and be built on Azure. And everybody thought, oh man, Citrix is totally getting it now. And then we didn't hear anything about it for a year. And now we know a little bit more about Workspace Services, and it's not all we did was realize that we never actually had a clear picture about what it was last year in May. So yeah, each year, I mean, I think Citrix says the right things each year, but delivering on them, I'm not saying they don't deliver on them. I'm just saying that, it would be nice to come away with Synergy with an actual clear picture of what Citrix has in mind.
Yeah. And so Workspace Services, I can speak to that cause I've been testing that and giving feedback, and, myself and Dan are doing a session at Bryform, London and Denver on that. So, mm-hmm. They renamed it Workspace Cloud because, you know, you had the same acronym for two different things. So you had Citrix Workspace Services and Workspace Suite. So it got renamed to Workspace Cloud. The nice thing is think of it from the share file concept. And this is how I kind of explain it to customers, to where it's the control plane like share file, but you choose where the actual workloads go. So with Workspace Cloud, you know, it's more of the control plane helping with those infrastructure pieces to stand up, like controllers and that kind of stuff. But from our side, it's still going to be, you know, dealing with applications, making sure the images are proper, you know, PBS or MCS, and they're going to have a service to tie it into to the authentication to the Workspace Cloud control plane. So it's going to be on the lines of kind of like what ShareFile is today, to where you pick where your data goes, whether it's ShareFile Cloud, whether it's on-prem, whether you put it in Azure, wherever. But that control plane is managed by Citrix, to where they can do the patching and the upgrades and those things to it more rapidly than most enterprises can, where they have those long change management cycles. Mm-hmm. So I see the benefits of it, and I see the vision. And I'm kind of, that's one of the things I'm kind of excited for, to see what they do at Synergy and what's announced, especially the stuff they're doing with the Scale Extreme and some of the lifecycle management as well.
Yeah, so, and that's another one of those things that kind of went under the radar of most users. I mean, that's the kind of thing, like, we saw that and paid attention to it a little bit, but I don't even think we wrote an article about Scale Extreme just because it seemed kind of obscure. Not that it didn't have anything to do with our space, but that, you know, it just wasn't something that piqued our interest. But
what is Scale Extreme?
So Scale Extreme is kind of like their lifecycle management automation piece. They did a couple demos of it at Summit, and they showed some of it to the crowd. And I believe it. Hopefully, it's going to be fully announced and released at Synergy. But it's along those lines to help also with the Workspace Cloud initiative as well.
And then, so the final question from the chat is: Travis asks, "Do you see FrameHawk as awesome as I do?"
I do, but I don't see FrameHawk as a use case for everything. I see it for certain use cases. So I like what they're doing with it. I like the acquisition. It's, you know, they have some pretty neat things they can do with it because it's more of a framework than actually a protocol or a channel. Right now, my biggest thing is to see how they actually integrate it with NetScaler is what I want to see for the next portion of it.
And, because and it's mainly side. Focused on sort of long-haul WAN delivery.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the FrameHawk stuff is not just about the protocol or that piece. There's a lot of things they can do with the framework. Some of the cool things that they showed us on the summit floor when I was just talking with Gunnar and Stephen Vikes, you know, doing some things around like colorblind correction or putting watermarks and stuff. You know, so there's some pretty neat things they could do with that technology. I know some of those long haul use cases is what they're working on now, from what I understand. But you know, what else they do with it, they have a lot of applications that could be used for.
Yeah. So the final question I'm going to ask, because we're out of time now, is to all the stuff, and we were sort of just all over the place in terms of questions and industry and what's going on and all that sort of stuff. I mean, of all the vendors, all the space, all the technologies, what are you most excited about? Like, what do you think's got the biggest potential in the next, you know, 6-12 months, whether it's product, whether it's company, whether it's trend, strategy, you know, what do you think is going to be the most exciting we'll be talking about in the next few months?
I think, you know, some of the things that we talked about with the virtual mobile stuff, the VMI stuff, you know, that's interesting. Some of the app refactoring stuff that I've seen out there, looking at those type of things. Also just seeing hopefully the convergence of mobility and traditional desktop management, you know, seeing what companies do with that as well. You know, the NSX use case is an interesting one also. So there's a lot of things that are out there that are that are kind of in the works that interest me. And I like to see how those actually, you know, come to actually products or actually come to, you know, enterprise and business use cases. I do like the Internet of Things, but for me, it's not from the consumer side. It's more from what it can do on the enterprise side.
So that's Jari and Gibson. People who listen to this and think you're awesome and want to connect further and see you speak, what's your speaking schedule look like in the next, you know, rest of this year?
Yeah, so I'll be doing two sessions at Bryform, London and Denver.
Hey, it's your first time to London too, I think, for us, right?
Yep, first time to London. Submitted before, but this is the first time we've gotten accepted for London. So I'll be speaking with fellow CTP Andy Morgan, where we're actually going to be talking about the latest updates of Zen Desktop and Horizon and applying that to the tech bake-off framework type stuff that Shane and I have talked about over the years. And then myself and another fellow CTP, Dang Young, will be talking about the Workspace Cloud stuff and presenting on that and doing some demos and going through it and talking about Workspace Cloud. We're doing the same two sessions at Denver, the same session with Dane, but on the Horizon and Zen Desktop one, I'll be doing with Shane Kleiner in Denver instead of Andy. And then I'll also be speaking at Synergy. I have three sessions, which is going to be a fun week because, you know, go to Synergy, come home for a couple of days, and go to London. So I think in the course of 7 days there or under 10 days there, I'm doing five sessions. So five different sessions. So at Synergy, I'll be doing a session with Andy Morgan again and Connor Schoolard about Zen Desktop, hosted, on-prem, the mobile cloud. And then I'll be doing a session, solo session of myself talking about Zenapp, Zen Desktop Monitoring Services, Director, OData, that kind of stuff. And then I'll be doing a joint session with new CTP, Anton Van Pelt, about ShareFile Enterprise. So be a pretty busy May for me.
That's crazy, because your sessions are all about pretty different topics too. So it's you're really you know, sort of a man of many expertise areas.
And that's why we chose you to be on this podcast.
And yeah, so it's gonna. I'm already doing my session stuff now here in March, getting that stuff ready and making sure all that's planned out, because of that time frame of doing the five sessions. It's gonna be a pretty busy time. So I'm already starting, you know, getting all that stuff together and ready now. That way it's nothing last minute comes up, and I'm not trying to be frantic at the last couple of weeks of April and beginning of May getting stuff done.
Yeah, I think the general, with Brainform and Synergy so close, like the general Citrix support community will kind of shut down as everyone sort of goes into hiding to finish up their sessions.
Can I, there's one comment in the chat room I saw. Can I address that real quick?
Yeah, sure thing.
So I wasn't saying the layoffs at Citrix were refocusing. I was saying more of the reorg stuff they're doing is kind of the refocus piece, not the layoffs. And you know, it's sad to see people get laid off, but I wasn't talking about the refocus on the layoff side of it. It was more on the reorg side.
Oh yeah, as a matter of fact, I think I was the one that threw the word layoff in there. I think you talked about the reorg, and I was the one to tie that back to layoffs. So that's on me.
And I think I colored that with massive. So
yeah,
blame us.
But we do know, like, yeah, the layoffs suck. Obviously everyone's got a different story. But a few sort of friends of ours who got laid off, I know, have landed on their feet at other companies. So that's certainly a good thing.
Yeah, so it's good. You know, it's always a shame to see, and not a good time when people get laid off. But it's good to see them be out there and land on their feet at different places. So I wish them all the best, and hopefully the other ones that are still in transition or find a new home and they're happy with it.
And Citrix did give a lot of severance and stuff. So I think, I mean, layoffs are always tough, but I feel like Citrix, you know, they as hard as layoffs are, did the, you know, looks like they were taking care of the people who they did lay off.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so that's Jarian Gibson, and you are on Twitter at Jarian Gibson. And yeah, thank you for joining us today, and we really appreciate it, and we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, thank you for having me again, and you know, anytime, I'll be happy to come back on and talk.
All right, and so thanks as always to Jack Madden in San Francisco, Gabe Knuth in Omaha, our engineer Justin Meisinger, our project manager Mariah Lyons, and from San Francisco, I'm Brian Madden. Thank you all for listening today. We'll see you next week.